Welcome to the Sunday night newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. We will now introduce our speaker, a member who has at least 6 months abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Please help me welcome Jessica, a compulsive overeater from...
I'm from Barrie, Ontario, Canada.
Well,
thanks, Kimberly. Hi, everyone. So I'm Jessica C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. And I'm in Barrie. There is a big storm about to hit. You might hear some thunder in the background. How dramatic. I do want to share my story because I really hope that it helps someone who's maybe new to the program or maybe a returning member in relapse, help you identify in and know that you're in the right place. I don't want it to just be a drunkalogue or a foodalogue. So I will spend, a lot of time as well talking about how there is a lot of hope of having the food obsession be removed as the result of working the 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book, which is how I came about to be recovered and having that spiritual awakening. So I was always overweight. I was an overweight child. And even before the weight started to show up on my body, I always had an abnormal reaction to food, though I didn't know that it was abnormal at the time. I thought that everyone else wanted, excess food or, my binge foods as much as I wanted them. But they were just better. I just thought other people were better at controlling, the desire to eat compulsively than I was. I did my first diet when I was in high school, and it was Weight Watchers. And I recall when I did that diet, I had this sort of pink cloud experience where it seemed really easy for me to give up the excess food and to lose weight. And I remember thinking, I'm not doing this. Something else is doing this for me. And I think that for whatever reason, God sort of swooped in during that first diet. I'm not sure why, because it was just Weight Watchers. But I guess in some way I was admitting powerlessness over food. And, it was the first time I had ever done that. And maybe God was planting a seed and letting me know that it was possible for him to enter my life and lift the food obsession. Before I started that first diet, I did go to see my family doctor to ask him about losing weight. And he actually gave me some OA pamphlets. Now, this was back in like the 90s. I could tell that these pamphlets had been around a long time because of the color scheme. It was like they had like Harvest Gold and that those 70s like muddy brown and orange green colors in them. So I knew they had been around for a long time, and it definitely didn't seem, it was definitely not what I wanted. It wasn't, I had no idea what it was about, and it didn't really offer me, a quick win solution like a diet program was offering me. I think it was, possibly another example of my higher power, just leaving a little breadcrumb for me and saying, hey, this exists, because OA is a lot harder to find than a diet program. Diet programs find you, or they found me. I had to really go out and find OA. It was, again, there's no billboards for OA, but I do believe that, God was sort of planting this seed again and saying this exists. And, there obviously came to be a time where I, I remembered that it existed and I knew that I really needed, that was what I really needed. So yeah, you know, after that first diet experience, I did keep some weight off and I went to university, and that's when things really started to unravel for me. I had a longtime boyfriend and we broke up, and I was suddenly like just I suddenly, it was like a switch went off and I was just depressed and anxious. I became to feel depressed and had anxiety a lot of the time. And, I had always, you know, when I was overweight as a kid and as a teenager, I never really binged. I just sort of generally overate and maybe sort of grazed. But now, you know, in university after this breakup, I started to like really feel compelled to have big binges with food, where I wanted to be, where I, you know, planned them out. I knew what I was going to get. I knew when I could be alone to do it. And I guess I was truly treating food at like a drug. And yeah, so I, you know, it was really perplexing too, because I definitely didn't want to gain. I did not want to gain weight, or any of the weight that I lost on that diet. And in my rational mind, I knew that binge eating and gaining weight was going to be, you know, get in the way of the things that I wanted, you know, like having a relationship, getting the guy, being admired by others, looking the way that I wanted to look when I looked at myself in the mirror, you know, fitting into a certain type of clothing, you know, very selfishly, these are all the things that were so important to me. But yet I couldn't stop eating. I was truly compelled to overeat and gain weight and have and put distance between myself and all of those external things that I really wanted. That powerful, diseased part of my mind and my soul really wanted the food more, and sort of overrode what my rational mind wanted. And you know, I felt many times, I remember many times feeling like I had no choice but to eat compulsively. If you've seen the Star Wars movies, there's this thing called a tractor beam, where like the ships will like focus the beam, the starship focuses a beam on maybe another ship or something in the space, and it draws it in with this tractor beam, and the whatever the object is that's being pulled into the tractor beam has no choice but to be pulled into the other ship. And I really felt like the food had a tractor beam on me. Like I was truly compelled to eat. You know, I remember many times being at home by myself and knowing that there was food in the fridge that was a very, you know, very attractive to me. And I just couldn't help myself. I felt like I was being pulled towards the fridge. So, you know, after university, things, you know, continue to get worse for me. You know, step one says we are powerless over food and our lives are unmanageable. I suddenly felt like I didn't have any sort of inner foundation or inner center of security anymore. And what I didn't know at the time was that I was having a spiritual crisis. And my compulsive eating continued to get worse. You know, I kept gaining weight. I kept trying diets. But I was at the point where I couldn't make the diet last for more than a few days. And then maybe it was a day I could make the diet last. And then I remember not being able to do it for more than a couple of hours. I couldn't make it to lunch without eating compulsively. And for me, you know, like I sometimes I hear people say that, you know, they're, you know, triggered by something bad, something happening that is, you know, not what you wanted to have happen. Maybe you had a bad day at work, or, you know, you know, something kind of in the external world kind of didn't go the way you wanted. So, you know, people say they pick up food for that reason. I mean, that is true for me, but I also had many days where nothing went wrong, where everything went exactly the way I wanted. I was getting what I wanted in life, and food seemed like eating compulsively seemed like a good idea. And that would, of course, you know, that would always spiral into remorse about eating compulsively again. And I was just so puzzled about why I had done this. Why had I picked up food again when nothing was wrong. I didn't have anything to solve. I wasn't trying to solve anything with the food. I felt compelled to continue to go to food no matter what. So I guess the next turning point for me, happened 16 years ago. You know, I had like a part-time job in a health food store of all places. I was binging on food in the health food store. And, I was feeling totally desperate. And I suddenly remembered when my doctor had told me about OA when I was a teenager. And, you know, I swear I hadn't thought about that moment since it happened. And suddenly it just came back to me, like, you know, 10 years later. And by that time, I had tried everything. You know, I tried all the diets. I tried counseling. I had tried, you know, a lot of, I tried things like, you know, antidepressants, and nothing seemed to work. So by that point, I exhausted all other options, and I was ready to try something. I knew I needed something different. And, you know, this solution of OA, where food was considered, you could be addicted to food, this idea, I realized I needed something like that. So I was working in this health food store, and the same day, a woman who was a sales rep for, a company that made natural health products came in, and we chatted a bit. And I remember thinking that I really liked her, that we sort of had this instant rapport. So that day I looked up OA in my area, and I saw that there was a meeting that night. So I went to the meeting. It was just a small meeting, maybe six or seven people. And at the meeting was the woman who came into the store that day. And I always thought that was another like breadcrumb that God was leaving me, or a sign that I was in the right place. So yeah, that was 16 years ago. I first found OA. I love the fellowship. I really benefited from knowing that I wasn't alone in this disease anymore, that other people did what I did with food. And I did get some spiritual recovery. But I never worked the steps. I never really worked the steps. I never really, it was never focused in on the big book. And, you know, I believe that the allergy of the body nor the obsession of the mind never really left me. It sort of got lowered, you know, the allergy got lowered to maybe a low hum. And I did let go of some of the really obvious binge foods. But I kept a lot of them in. I was still eating foods and food ingredients that triggered the allergy. And I was finding ways to include these, you know, quote unquote, safe foods in my plan of eating. And the obsession of the mind, you know, I remember during that time, you know, I lost a lot of weight. You know, things were sort of going well in some ways, like on the surface, things looked like they were going really well, but the unmanageability was still there. I still had, a ton of fear all the time about, not getting my needs met, things not going the way I wanted them to go at work. My defects selfishness, what I realize now, defects of selfishness, self-centeredness, entitlements, so much entitlement, feeling like I shouldn't have to work that hard and people should just, people should just do what I think is the right idea because it's my idea. I didn't even realize how much that was going on for me. And of course it was getting in the way of having good relationships, you know, having, a sense of peace and ease, and the food, you know, I couldn't wait till I could have my next meal. Like I was eating, you know, in a much saner way, but I just couldn't wait till that next meal to get some relief. So inevitably, I got into a really, sort of heavy period of relapse in 2014. I was led to, the big book and working the steps through the big book and, a daily phone-in meeting, which people here may be familiar with, called A Vision for You. But there were, you know, at that time, there were things I needed to do to get a spiritual awakening, so that my food obsession could be lifted that I just wasn't willing to do yet. There were foods and beverages that I just couldn't see myself not having. And, a lot of it was caring about what other people thought, you know, thinking about like, what's it going to be like to be at a restaurant and have to, you know, order something off the menu that is, you know, safe for me to eat? Or what's it going to be like, you know, for me, alcohol was a trigger. You know, there were many times where I would drink alcohol, I would have alcohol, and then that would lead to a binge later on. And I just, you know, I at the time I was like, what am I going to do in my social life? You know, it just seemed like it was this thing that had a mortgage on my soul, the way the food did. And I just wasn't willing to give it up yet. So, but not giving up those things and, you know, not really going to God for my ease and comfort, instead of the food, or not going to external validation for my sense of validation, that kept me in the relapse. I think another thing too is like, I never wanted to help others in the program. You know, it was, I really wanted people to help me. I would like take my sponsors hostage in a way and other fellows hostage. You know, I wanted people to be at my beck and call and help me sort of get through a tough moment. But there was never any sort of, again, sort of like long lasting, relief from my unmanageability or my, you know, my food obsession. I would do service, but I just couldn't see myself sponsoring, you know, partly because I didn't think I had much to offer, but mostly because I was just so selfish. I just really wanted people to help me. So, you know, during that whole period of relapse, you know, I received a lot of, you know, caring and support from sponsors and fellows. And I heard at times, that I was in relapse because I wasn't willing to work hard enough, or that I didn't want it enough. It was actually the thing I wanted most, you know, was to not have this obsession with food anymore. But my ego, my disease really has an uncanny ability to regenerate itself. It always took over and I would always go back to the food. It was a relief for me to learn that through an OA fellow, that it's perhaps not true that people are in relapse because they don't want it enough. I know what's true for me is that, you know, my brain has all of these data points that show me that I can't eat certain foods or engage in certain food behaviors without triggering a binge. There's other things that I know that I can't or shouldn't do. And I have data points to remind me that I can't and shouldn't do those things. You know, for me, an example is I have to wear sunscreen. I'm very pale. You probably can't tell by how dark it is here now, but, I'm someone who's like very likely susceptible to skin cancer. It's in my family. You know, I know I have to wear sunscreen when I go outside. And so I'm really vigilant about that. But, you know, my brain just doesn't make that same connection when it comes to food. You know, I can have binged on a food, you know, hundreds of times, and I can still see it in the grocery store and think, oh, it's fine. I can have some of that. You know, it can still seem like a good idea. So there's a broken bridge for me. Like my mind, there isn't a connection there to remind me and have me recoil from that idea of compulsive eating without the help of without a higher power, you know, lifting that obsession. I have known people that have died in this program. I know people who've died of heart attacks. I know people who have ended their own lives. You know, this is a disease that can kill us. Yet I still engaged in some really shocking food behaviors and thought it was okay each time I began a new binge, that it wouldn't be that bad. So, you know, about 3 years ago, I was in a heavy relapse. You know, I was, you know, doing things like spending entire weekends by myself, you know, just going from bed to bathroom to couch, back to bed again. Like that was like, you know, that was what my life consisted of. You know, I remember just not wanting to live. I'd wake up after a binge and I would be like, I didn't want to, you know, kill myself, but I didn't want to live. I didn't want to live anymore. So I went to see my doctor and he knew about my history of binge eating. And he suggested that I try, you know, a medication. And he brought it up a few times and I knew that it wouldn't be a good idea, but I, someone who is an addict, I wanted that easier, softer way. So I did decide to try this prescription medication for binge eating disorder. So, you know, this was a stimulant. And I think I'll just say that, you know, this became an entirely new problem for me, this medication. And it was something that I began to abuse. And it actually never stopped me from compulsive eating. I was still taking this medication. And once it would sort of wear off, I was back in the food again. About a year after I started taking this medication, I met my fiance. Things moved quickly and we moved in together shortly before the pandemic. And he knew about my compulsive eating and he knew about this medication I was taking. But I hid from him that I was still actively binge eating and, you know, hid from him, that I was, you know, abusing this medication as well. And, you know, I guess a few things happened at that time. First of all, now I had somebody around who could see what was going on with the food, who saw it. I had a firsthand witness. And the second thing is, you know, right when the pandemic hit, I had one day where my heart was just racing and I was getting chest pains. And it was because of this medication, because I was abusing it. And normally when that would happen, because it wasn't the first time, I would go to a pharmacy and check my blood pressure at one of those chairs. And now I couldn't do that anymore because they were all, that you couldn't use them anymore. So I went to the emergency room. So I was in, you know, I was in the emergency room. And it just really hit me like, this is where I'm at, you know, with this disease. You know, I'm sitting here in an emergency room. I can hear people within earshot describing their COVID-19 symptoms. You know, I'm not just putting myself at risk because I'm taking this medication, because I'm binge eating. That in itself is doing a number on my body. But now, am I going to catch this, like, at, you know, this disease because I have to go to the hospital because of what I've been doing? I had to let that go. I had to put that medication down and I knew the food, though it never left, it would come roaring back 10 times. Before I left the program, like I did step away from OA during that time. And, before I did that, I talked to a recovered fellow and, I told her I was thinking of taking this medication. And she said to me, it was so kind, you know, she didn't try to talk me out of it or tell me it was a bad idea. She said, yeah, maybe, you know, give it a try. You know, but you can always call me. she said, you could always call me. I thought that if I shared this with somebody in OA, I would be told, don't ever call me. That's not what I got so much kindness from this person. And she was the first person I called when I decided to come back. And, you know, she is the person who's my sponsor today and who took me through the steps and helped me get recovered. I guess I'll talk a little bit about that experience. You know, we just went through the big book, you know, chapter by chapter, and we used a step study guide, which is available online. That's the oabigbook.info step study guide. And that was created by a fellow named Lori C, in case you're interested in looking it up. For me, part of working step one was being honest about what my binge foods are and being willing to let them go. So I knew about the obvious ones, you know, the desserts, the ice cream, the cookies, and I have neutrality around these foods today, and I rarely think about them. They're in my house because my fiance eats, he's a normal eater and he can eat those foods. Before I got recovered, you know, I work from home and he doesn't. So there were many times where I would eat the ice cream or the cookies during the day. I would go to the grocery store, buy more to replace it so he wouldn't know what I'd done. Then I would eat the stuff that I just bought, and then I would go and buy it and replace it again. And so much deception was happening, and I had to make amends to him for that. And I guess I just want you to know that, like, I remember thinking there's no way I could be in my house by myself with these foods and not eat them. But the reality is that I don't think about them. Like I will forget that those foods are here. I'll be reminded when I happen to see them in the cupboard. So that doesn't mean that like life is perfect for me today. You know, I have a job that brings up a lot of opportunities for me to work this program and, you know, have my higher power, you know, build a relationship with a higher power so that I can trust that even if things don't go my way, things will be okay. But, you know, when those fears and resentments come up during the day for me, I don't think about food as a solution to them. So I just want to really share that is possible. And that was only 7 months ago for me that, where I felt like it would be impossible for me to not keep doing those things with those foods. And I think, you know, I've spent time talking about, you know, the relief from the allergy of the body. One thing I want to mention too is, you know, the obvious foods, I put those down right away. What came after were, you know, kind of these substitute foods. You know, like I talked about ice cream and I put that down right away. And I realized that I was like, there were like sort of these secondary foods that were kind of coming up, and I realized, oh, now like that I was going to these other foods that were sort of less obvious for ease and comfort. And, you know, I would make these smoothies that were full of healthy foods, but I realized that it was just an ice cream substitute. And, you know, I used to eat that every single day as my breakfast. And I remember again thinking, how am I not going to have this in my life anymore? And I can tell you now that it is no problem for me to not have that food in my life anymore. So I think one part of my recovery that's been really important is, you know, step 6 and 7, and also step 11 and helping me with the unmanageability that comes up for me. Step 6 is becoming entirely willing to have God remove my defects of character. For me, that means I have to recognize and admit what my defects are. You know, I mentioned my entitlement. I can be really lazy and expect to get a lot out of doing little, not very much. So I have to act the opposite of that. You know, my first inclination might be to cut corners and be lazy, but I have to act as if I'm a hardworking person. I have to act as if I'm not entitled, and that other, I have to, focus on other people and lift them up and sort of recognize what the good things that they are doing and their value and stop expecting it for myself. And sometimes that's the most unnatural thing for me. But I can do that. And that demonstrates to my higher power that I'm willing to let those defects go. And then, you know, step seven is humbly asking God to remove those defects. You know, God is not, I can't remove the initial inclination to, you know, be selfish or take the easy way. I'm going to get that initial thought. God has to remove that. But what I can do is not nurture that initial thought about taking the easy way or being entitled or being selfish or being in fear. Nurturing the fear the fear will occur, but I can instead nurture courage. And that is a demonstration to God that I want to have my fear removed and have it replaced with courage. Step 11, you know, deepening my relationship with God. If I want to truly turn to God to have him continue to restore me to sanity with food and to remove my character defects, and I have to believe that he can do it, and that God wants to help me, that I'm important enough to him that he will help me. I said earlier that my ego has an uncanny ability to regenerate itself. So I have to keep regenerating that relationship with God. So that's finding, spending more time in prayer and meditation, doing it throughout the day. And for me, that even means finding spiritual books, maybe not 12-step based, but just books about, building that relationship with God. And I know I'm sort of running short, almost at time, but I'll just want to say for anyone here who's put off, maybe a little bit put off by the idea of a spiritual solution to our disease, I want to share that for me, that building a relationship with God and asking him every day and throughout the day for help really felt foreign to me. And I felt like I was talking to this being that wasn't listening. But it has turned into a source of true validation for me. Instead of seeking out that external validation, I'm starting to get a sense that I'm just inherently worthwhile because I am, a child of God. And it's kind of an experience that's hard to describe. And I think it happens if you keep moving down this path. I think I'll talk a little bit about step 12. Maybe I'll close with that. I said earlier, I never really wanted to help others. I definitely wanted people to help me, and I couldn't see myself sponsoring. I think that is a huge part of, my recovery today. I can get really focused in on getting my own needs met and having time for myself, but it's actually part of my dishonesty is thinking that the more time I have for my own, things I want to do leads to greater happiness. That's actually not true. I find that I get so much joy out of working with others, being a sponsor, being of service, and not just doing it in a passing sense. It really is energizing, and I get joy and peace out of doing that I never got out of being obsessed with food, eating compulsively, or being obsessed with getting my own selfish needs met. I think I'll end there. So with that, I'll pass.
Jessica, thank you so much. You painted a very vivid picture of unmanageability, and you gave us a lot of hope as well. So that was a wonderful share.